It's not a hell of a lot of other changes, but it's important changes, and that's a great way to start episode 123 of the Overclock Betting Podcast. Thank you for joining us. I am Lindsay Shooters, Sharpshooters on social media, that opinion guy on the internet. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, friend, and mentor in some ways.
Ooh,
I'll give you that. Gavin Dudley, editor of the continent's largest consumer technology publication, Tech Magazine. Gavin, how are you doing?
Good. I'm feeling a bit of pressure being a mentor now, you know, because we're already at that thing where the student becomes the teacher thing. So we got there really quickly.
I'm just trying to get you in the zone, Gavin. I know you woke up early this morning. Public holiday, Freedom Day, happy birthday, South Africa.
Okay, good. Hey, good point that. Freedom Day technically is the birthday of the nation. Good point, sir.
Yes. Moving on to other things that are not so free anymore. I almost called you my son's name. This is just how I converse with my five-year-old. Using this register.
Okay, don't take that student becomes the teacher thing a little too far. Hey? Yeah, okay.
Apple unleashed iOS 14.5 on the world yesterday. We are recording this on Tuesday, the 27th. Yesterday, it went live to the world with all of the privacy secure. They put out like a YouTube video. Have you watched the movie Soul?
No, I haven't. I'm just not feeling that kind of movie at the moment. I'm just not feeling those kind of kid-friendly animation things. Not feeling it.
Watch it. It's very deep.
It won a couple of Oscars. One or two, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. Do not care about the Oscars. You can update us briefly.
Okay. Right. It did win an Oscar, probably for soundtrack or something. Okay. But yeah. Anyway, okay.
So it's like this black background kind of white line illustration, and it like turns into circles and stuff, and it's talking about like your privacy, and this is the new screen that you'll be presented with when you update to 14.5, and it allows you to choose whether you want these apps to track you. So like when you go for a run and it uploads like your data and like analyzes your stride and all that stuff, or where it like then it's like this flow diagram thing of like just strands going off where your data is going to and data collection, all of that. So now 14.5, big headline. Obviously, you must have seen it around. I know all South African tech Twitter is going crazy about it. Everybody is weighing in. Even some marketers are saying, how do you negotiate in a world where iOS devices now can choose to opt out of like those data gathering data gathering techniques? What's your read on this, Gavin? Given the South African context where iPhones are like 2% of the market.
Yeah, but okay, it has been growing. That 2% I noticed has been growing. I don't know if that's like the secondhand phone market, but anyway. So I know you're calling it a fake privacy revolution, and I'm mostly on board with that. I suppose you have to explain what you mean. Mm. But what I see is that Apple has very cunningly turned what was its vulnerability into its... they're trying to turn that into a plus, because unlike Google, Facebook, and others, they claim to not have collected user data in the same way. The truth is they do have access to your user data. They just claim they won't be using it or that they're not collecting it. But, you know, they have access to just as much user data as everyone else, just by virtue of stuff you download from the App Store and so on. But the fact that they are not collecting data at the same granular level as Google and Facebook and others means that a lot of their own proprietary technologies don't work nearly as well as they could or should. Mm. Hence, their Maps initiative fell apart a bit. Hence, their other things just didn't work nearly as well. Siri doesn't work nearly as well. And so on and so on, largely because they're not using granular user data to evolve their product. But they're trying to turn that into a virtue of some kind. There's a lot... And of course, they're using that as a competitive advantage now against the likes of Facebook. What's going on? The company most affected by their new privacy regulations that you've just described is probably Facebook, because it makes it very hard to sell targeting adverts. You can maybe explain in detail what that actually means. So that's the one issue, is that they're using what was a vulnerability as a virtue now, on the one hand. The other thing is, I think I'm getting really tired of iOS having, well, of Apple having a whole lot of different operating systems. Okay, it's one thing if you've got Android and you separate it from your Windows, and then there's the way for those two to come together on your PC or whatever. But they've now got, is it like 4 or 5 different splinter operating systems? iOS for the iPad, which is a different thing. iOS iPad. For TV is a different thing. The Mac OS is a different thing, except they all made on the same code base. As I've said before, and I'll say it again now, the way Apple's going to increase its power exponentially within the next year to a year and a half, they're going to bring all the operating systems together. Why is that possible now for the first time? Because they have a unified hardware substructure in the M1 chip, which they're now rolling out into everything. I mean, I can't see how they're going to get that into a phone in like 1 year's time, but certainly within 2 years, I'm pretty sure the phone processor and the M1 processor that they put in everything else will have converged, which means they can then have a single code base for all their operating systems. It is an absolute nightmare trying to develop all the operating systems simultaneously, plug all the holes, check them all for security, blah, blah, blah. If you can have all your devices running in a single kind of hardware system like the M1 chip, which is what we've seen them doing, rolling it out to tablets and Apple. Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't rolled it out to Apple TV yet, but they could. Once we have that sort of rolled out to all the hardware devices, it'll be much simpler to have a single operating system where everything just interoperates brilliantly all the time. The company who came closest to doing that was Microsoft, which could have combined the Xbox, the phones, and the PCs. They could have combined those three in a single code base. I think they missed a trick in not doing that, but they had so many other problems at the time, I think. If Microsoft had combined phone, PC, and Xbox together, they would have been the first company to make a mega platform. And Android's kind of started doing that because, you know, Android, almost in its same form, is available on Android TV, on phones, and so on and so on. Apple going to do the same, and that will give it exponentially more power and traction going forward. So, you know, you can start forgetting about your iOS updates versus your Mac OS updates and what does and doesn't speak to each other, all going to become a unified platform. And that is how artificial intelligence eventually takes over the world and enslaves us all.
The singularity. Yeah. That's a heavy theory for early in the morning.
Okay. But you can't deny it makes a lot of sense. If you were Tim Cook, wouldn't you rather have one potent operating system that you can fix and clean and maintain, instead of like 4 or 5 different ones?
They don't really have 4 or 5. They have like all the iOS stuff is a singular code base that just has different skins put on it. So like iPadOS is very much iOS with a different kind of skin. And I see they're going to be updating it now further with iOS 15 or iPadOS 15. But anyway, that's besides, let's park that for a second.
Right.
The singularity is deferred.
Right. yes.
So let's talk about how apps track your data. So with the strength of developing the hardware and the software in a vertical stack simultaneously for it to work together, Apple can do one thing, and they do it. I'm going to explain it in the context of file sharing. So if you take a picture on your iPhone using the stock camera app, using the wonderful Pro Raw format that they have introduced. Explain in my YouTube video that will drop later this week. So if you want to edit that picture in Lightroom, which is an app that is on your phone, that app technically creates a copy of like a proper copy, like a real, what do you call it in the old days when... Anyway,
clone. So okay,
the clone of that picture, yeah, then moves that clone file into its own file directory, so it operates like in a silo,
right?
And then it does its thing, and then you can save it, or you can replace the original with the clone,
right?
So in that same way, in that siloed sort of thing, they can regulate what data an app can see that your phone is generating. So if the advertising or like Facebook wants to know what device you are on, you can now opt in to sharing that kind of information. If you opt out of it, Apple runs some really clever code in the background that effectively lies to the service and just keeps like shuffling your information around so you can't like detect it. So what companies do when they have this is they will form a digital fingerprint of you. So now on an app by app basis, you can decide what you want to share with the apps, the data that's generated on your phone.
And they're betting, as most people are, that when you know how much of your stuff is being exposed, you're going to kind of raise your hands in shock and immediately start denying all those apps access to your data.
Yeah. And this is something that Steve Jobs started way back, like at the founding of like Apple with the launch of the iPhone, was that users should know what is happening. And it's it's a basic human right to be aware of what is happening. Because in the digital world, everything's happening behind this cloak of complexity.
So I don't know
exactly what is happening inside of this computer that I'm looking at while we are recording this over Teams. I am not sure exactly how much data, how much of this is going directly to Gavin, how much is going to Microsoft servers, and how much of that data is being spread.
Okay. All right. But here's the thing. I mean, why should we care? I mean, I've got issues with this. I feel as though that horse is already bolted especially for our generation. Everything about us that needs to be known is known. The only new thing they want to know is what sneakers I'm going to buy from Amazon tomorrow. They'd like to add that to the pile of stuff they already know about me. But absolutely everything else is easily knowable about me. Not because I've been incautious, but because when companies were developing all these technologies, we were largely oblivious to how much detail was actually being scraped out of our lives by, you know, these systems. When Google came along, it was just this fabulous search engine that would just find everything for us all the time. Nobody had a thought about what was going on in the background. You know, this goes back to like the 90s, you know, it's a long time ago. Same with Facebook. It was just a great way to share with friends and family. No one thought about advertising or anything like that. Fact is, neither Google nor Facebook thought about advertising when they were launching their product. They were just geeks at the time with fabulous product. And over time, you know, shareholders and stakeholders, you know, became the issue and not the consumer. Mm-hmm. So I think that horse is bolted for most of us. I also think, don't shoot the messenger, okay? But there are a lot of benefits we gain from giving away our information, as we well know. Yes. We're about to find out how things don't work when you deprive the system of your information. So if you decide you don't want to share your information with Google, don't be surprised if suddenly your Maps data doesn't work properly or, you know,
something else doesn't work.
Oh, right. Yeah. you know, a whole lot of things are going to suddenly start working a lot less effectively. If I'm in Facebook today, 80% of the advertising I see is around tech, gadgets, digital services, these kind of things. Okay. If I start getting Facebook adverts for like cars and food and stuff, that is, you know, going to be a whole lot more annoying than the adverts I'm currently getting. So I don't know if this is two sides of the coin and whether we must anticipate that if we want all these free services, we have to give them something and we continue to use the services. I don't see Apple loads the taxes for all those things onto the devices themselves. In other words, you're going to pay a whole lot more for the device because Apple is going to struggle to make money from you any other way except from this device. They have to now sell you the Apple Plus movie system. They have to sell you more cloud storage. They have to sell you their existing suite of products because it's the only way to make more money out of you. You know, you're only buying that new iPhone every second year and maybe every third year and, you know, tablets even less. So that's why Apple's pivoting to services because that's where its future revenue stream lives. And they can do that. They can probably serve, well, I don't know. I mean, do you think they can serve Apple TV Plus to you without gathering any data? Don't they want to know your preferences and stuff in order to make the service better for you?
Yeah, but that's device
anonymized.
That's anonymized. And that's, it's linked to your, it's on their servers and it doesn't get shared with anybody else. So that is directly. So that's the big problem is, these companies will share your data, like Facebook will share your user data with that digital
fingerprint. It will sell your user data,
To other companies. And then, like, Facebook is a terrible, but it is also the best example of it, where your experience of Facebook can be shaped through promoted posts and things like that, that can push you down certain rabbit holes that you probably wouldn't have ventured into if you were in control of your own experience, you know?
Yes, okay. So I remember it was the CES, I think it was 2 years ago when we still had CES, and Apple ran a billboard-sized advert right outside the event because they never traditionally participate in this event, which the entire rest of the industry, of course, participates in. They don't. Their billboard advert was along the lines of what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. This is what they claimed. Of course, if they're watching Apple TV and collecting your preferences, clearly that's just not true. So that's a bit disingenuous, I feel, you know.
No, they put a lot of, like the way Siri works, there's a lot of emphasis put into on-device computing. So like, I'd say probably 60% of what Siri does outside of actually interpreting the words that you say stays on the device.
Yeah, but that's almost like backing the wrong horse. It's like buying a PS5 when clearly the world is moving to server-side gaming. You've just spent like 12,000 Rand on a thing that's going to be redundant in 2 to 3 years, you know? And
this conversation will evolve over time as we see the ramifications of like iOS 14.5 and what it's actually going to do in the market. I don't think it's going to make a big enough impact right now, but it's a step in the right direction. I believe firmly in the idea of a company actually doing the hard work to create the world that it wants to see, or at least that its virtue signaling says it wants to see.
Right. Okay. I'll give you that. Just for context, just a reminder that for all the talk about Apple and its products and its penetration in our market and so on, let's remember that only a few percent of South Africans actually have iPhones. Even fewer have tablets because they were very expensive and didn't need to be replaced all that often. Even fewer have PCs, I suspect, because the entry level to an Apple PC is about 15,000 or 16,000 Rand for a reasonable one. So, you know, they've just sort of priced themselves a little bit out of South Africa's mainstream. And so despite us discussing these things at great length, it affects very few South Africans. But it is important because it does contextualize what's going on in the broader industry. So that's why it's of interest to you, dear listener.
Moving on to other things that are also not coming to South Africa, because the South African arm of Samsung actually didn't send out invites to this event that's happening tomorrow as we speak today.
Okay.
Samsung Galaxy Book Go. So the YouTube ad, the teasers have all been the most powerful Galaxy ever.
Uh-huh.
So the rumors are the Galaxy Book Go, which is an update to the Galaxy Book S that we got last year that was running on Intel. So they were running on a Core i5 with hybrid technology.
Right.
Galaxy Book S was supposed to come here. Oh, yes. And on the Qualcomm Snapdragon 8CX. So Galaxy Book Go is rumored to be coming in with, on the lower end, a Snapdragon 7C, and on the higher end, the 8CX, and then on the global end, because Samsung loves to add many different types of devices.
I don't know why they have to do this, man.
On the Exynos 2100, which is running in the S21 family, but with the AMD graphics, because they had that little partnership that they announced
years ago.
And this is going to be the fruit of that in a portable Ultrabook style thing with a touch screen and a stylus.
So Samsung has never, as far as I can recall, brought its laptops to South Africa, have they? They may have done very briefly in the past.
At the beginning of the 2010s.
Okay. But I mean, they really have been a non-player in our market. And the truth is, I'm not sure what Samsung's actual laptop play is. They're a bit player in the market. You know, there's like 7 or 8 really big manufacturers ahead of them. Why do you think they even make laptops in the first place? Although, truth be told, their laptops are not bad. Their laptops are actually pretty good. It's just like so few people have them, you know. And I'm wondering what kind of play they see there, unless, of course, as you pointed out, there becomes a convergence between the mobile phone world and the laptop world in terms of processors and hardware architectures and this kind of thing allows them to achieve economies of scale, like huge economies of scale. If you're going to make this Exynos chip, wouldn't it be great if you could put it in laptops and in phones, you know? And that's the trick that Apple's learned, obviously.
That's the point. Like, everybody's chasing Apple now. It's like,
Chips
has thrown the cat amongst the pigeons. And
the influence of the M1 chip can't be underestimated, how it has driven other companies forward, but also how it's driven forward our perception of what computing should be. Even myself, who's an Apple naysayer, cannot deny that the performance boost they got out of that M1 chip and the sort of PR mileage they got out of that has reframed what's going on in the computing market. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is Samsung's the big great fight back. It's interesting that Google on the Android side and then Microsoft on like the Windows side have both picked Samsung as the vanguard.
I guess it's because, you know, they've probably got the brand awareness, they've got the penetration into the market, you know, they've got the most fingers in the most pies, and they've got fabs to fabricate chips, which, you know, is an issue. What have you picked up about all these problems with microchip shortages and stuff like that? I mean, it seems to be like a threat that's hanging over the industry.
Yeah, apparently it's going to be carrying on into 2023.
Is it real, or is this like a drummed up thing?
I believe it to be very real, but I believe it to be more a capacity thing. So like the likes of TSMC have retooled for like 5 nanometer, but then they get overwhelmed in terms of everybody's pushing towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the backlog, and then
shortages.
So I think it's more that than actually like factory workers couldn't be there.
Right. I see that TSMC has been the topic of much conversation on this podcast. That's the Taiwan Semiconductor, what is it?
Manufacturing company. It's,
yeah, something like that. Because they are like the hub of microprocessor creation for the whole world. There's been a lot of attention on them. It looks like they are now going to build a factory in the US, if you can believe that. That's amazing. Because, and I'm sure Apple is smiling on that. I'm sure Qualcomm is smiling on that. Others are smiling on that idea. Why? Because, as we discussed previously, if China tries to gain control of Taiwan the way it's doing at the moment, then the whole world's microchip production gets kind of thrown into disarray if China then, you know, gains control of that. So it's interesting that TSMC will go and build factories outside of Taiwan, but it would be a good thing for them to do business-wise. Okay, so this is a Samsung Galaxy Book, which is a laptop. Okay, yes. Book Go. Samsung Galaxy Book Go is a laptop. Will be unlikely to come to South Africa,
It will be the Galaxy Book Pro, which will come with the Intel chips and not the Qualcomm chips.
Okay, so
I'm talking to you through a Surface Pro 7.
You confused me now as well. I think Pro 7 is right. Yeah. Okay, so Surface is Samsung's equivalent of the Book, which is Microsoft's code for laptop is Surface, except that they tablets and laptops,
and desktops.
Oh, jeez.
Remember, this is the
covering
big
all your surfaces.
Yeah. To my mind, the Surface is supposed to be a 2-in-1 of sorts, where it's literally a glass surface that you do computing on, and you can draw on it, or you can manipulate it with your fingers, or a keyboard. The keyboard attachment is really fancy with an Alcantara covering.
Finish, right. But and then, it runs full Windows.
Yeah, it runs full Windows, and then there's like a weird little shift when you unplug the keyboard, and then it just goes into like more tablet kind of
interface. Okay.
Like you lose the search bar in your taskbar.
Okay.
Like if you're on a Windows computer, if you look next to like the Windows logo thing, there should be a search bar there if you are on current software.
Okay.
So that just disappears, and then that little circle button like goes to the side.
So this all just tightens up. Yeah.
I want to love this device, but I don't think Microsoft has really after, like, how many years has it been trying, like, touch interface now, like this step interface? I don't think it has any idea what it wants to say for in, like, the two-in-one computing space. Where, like, Apple infuriatingly has very strong opinions of what an iPad is, what an iPhone, and what the Mac is.
Yes.
Microsoft just kind of knows what that wants Windows to kind of be.
Okay.
How well, it should appear in different forms.
The whole reason Microsoft makes these devices in the first place is as a sort of a leader, a leadership play for the market to see what is possible for a Windows device. So they probably don't need a whole lot of money out of this division, but they do need to show industry leadership in the division. And as a result, they've got Touch that just runs on hybrid laptops, tablets, and mixtures of those two. Interestingly, Apple steadfastly refuses to make a laptop with a touchscreen. It's like it doesn't believe in it, and it just refuses to do it. But it's very happy to build up its iPad with better and better keyboards all the time. So who knows where it's really going. But other impressions you have of the Surface Pro 7, which is not a cheap device, eh?
No, it's not. It's very much in the 30,000 Rand territory.
But does it feel like a premium product? Is it slick and light?
It's beautiful. It's light. Uh-huh. The hinge for the kickstand is amazingly strong. Don't ask me how I know that.
Does it come with the keyboard as standard, or do you still have to buy it as an accessory?
You have to buy the keyboard. It does come with the Surface Pen as standard, which is really, really
okay.
Nice.
A couple of grand, yeah.
Yeah. But the keyboard, like, you don't really need the keyboard. You can bring your own Bluetooth keyboard. Which I actually prefer. The typing experience on the attachable keyboard is incredible. Like, they've threaded the needle of thinness and, like, stiffness.
Tactile. So, okay. Yeah, yes. Okay.
Like,
right.
Pieces are there. It's a beautiful device. But yeah. I'm going to run it like this for another week in its two-in-one kind of thing. And then I'm just going to put
drop the
dongles on it.
Okay.
And run it as like a desktop machine with a larger monitor.
Good idea. Interesting to see. I mean, interesting to see if you could turn that into a replacement desktop computer. That would be really interesting. There's no reason why it shouldn't, right? How many USB-C outs has it got? More than one?
One USB-C.
Oh, so you've got to put in like one mega dongle.
One USB 3 port, and then a Surface connector, which is currently the power thing because I don't have a Surface dock.
Okay, all right. So
there's that. Moving on, Gavin, some quick news. Elon Musk-related news. He's finally admitting defeat with the roof tiles, the solar roof tiles.
Oh, damn it, man. That was my most coolest product from Elon Musk ever. What do you mean admitting defeat? What has he said? I didn't get any of this.
He has said that they made significant mistakes. So there's all sorts of problems with deploying roof tiles. They can't get to a design that will
work. I think
we
better explain to the listeners what the hell we're talking about, these roof tiles.
So, you know, on your roof, you have tiles.
No, I have tin. No, I'm kidding. Okay.
We have a slope freaking corrugated roof. So most houses, suburban houses, especially if you live like in one of those complexes with like the Tuscan look and stuff, it has interlocking roof tiles. So imagine that was a solar panel. Each individual
lots of little solar panels, as tiles.
So this was the big idea. Elon Musk's cousins started a company called Solar City. And then Tesla acquired it in 2016. They are still the subject to a court case from some of the investors in Delaware in the United States because it was a very shady kind of premise that Elon made for acquiring this company. 21, and he's saying, like, we made significant mistakes in terms of the design, so they're overhauling the design now. Yeah, we will wait and see when this happens.
I mean, tell me, listeners, if this isn't the coolest idea you can imagine, roof tiles that are little solar panels. Isn't that just the most amazing thing you've ever heard? So you don't have to have great big solar panels on your roof. They just, and the technology, the micro technology to make tiny little solar panels to hook them all up together in serial or in parallel or whatever they do. And just think of the current you can generate when your entire roof is solar panels. It's brilliant. To me, this was like one of the breakthrough products that never got enough attention. But then we started hearing that they'd completely sold out of production capacity. In other words, they couldn't produce them nearly fast enough for the market to have any kind of real uptake. They couldn't produce them fast enough. And then the whole thing went quiet, and now this emerges. But I can't deny it was one of the most exciting, most interesting products from...
So what they're doing now is they upping the price, the final price of the roof tiles, and they are offering refunds, full refunds to everyone who have paid the deposit at the original price and can't stomach the price increase now.
Right.
When it will be deployed, we don't know. Other Elon Musk-related news, Jeff Bezos is coming at him. NASA was supposed to sign two suppliers for their moon mission. And then they only signed SpaceX because of the $3.3 billion that they requested from the U.S. government. They only received like $800 million or something.
Oof.
So then they had to reduce to one. And now Jeff Bezos is in protest, sent it was like a 175-page document protesting. They filed it with the Government Accountability Office. Protesting this contract that has been awarded, calling into question SpaceX's. They haven't demonstrated, because the Starship is supposed to be able to refuel itself in orbit. They haven't demonstrated that, and there's a couple of other things, and they're saying that NASA moved the goalposts on them.
Right.
So yeah, there's a bit of a bun fight between Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk.
Yeah, these are the two wealthiest people in the world basically swinging their dicks around. But, you know, we do basically benefit from this in the long term. So for those who are unaware, SpaceX, Musk's space travel company, won the contract to resupply the space station and other projects. It was a big deal. Jeff Bezos, his project's called Blue Origin, his spaceships and so on, which are every bit as good as Musk's.
They haven't put anything into orbit yet, which Elon pointed out in a very cheeky tweet.
Yeah, but didn't they run a supply mission to the space station?
They haven't put anything into orbit.
Okay, well then Bezos doesn't have a leg to stand on, because SpaceX has been doing that for a while, going back and forth.
So the new thing is space. To establish a permanent base on the moon, almost like the space station, but on the moon. I fully support that. Not quite support the Mars mission, but then the future idea is to then run all of our Mars exploration missions from that moon base and not from Earth, because it would be easier to launch from there.
Because the effort required to break free of Earth's gravitational field and to leave the Earth every time, 3/4 of your effort goes into just getting off Earth. If you can leave from, you know, the moon, you're saving huge amounts of energy. Yeah, okay.
But again, Mars, we have now had 3 individual test flights of the Ingenuity helicopter, which was a passenger on the Mars rover. Which one is it? Perseverance.
Oh, gosh, I've lost the track as well. Okay, yeah, okay.
And it has now flown 3 times and successfully. And that is really exciting, because it's the first time humankind has flown an object on another planet.
And of course, all this footage is widely available through the NASA website and other places. You can actually go and see what it did. It's very cool to watch.
Yes. Gavin, it's a bit of a slow news week in terms of gadgety stuff. We have the Samsung launches. We have an upcoming next week. Monday, we'll talk about the Neo QLED TV, which is Samsung's new flagship television with the pop-up camera in it. We will talk about the idea of cameras inside of your TV unit.
Right. What all mean? Yeah.
Upcoming this week in production, final stages of production, is my iPhone 12 Pro Max video, which I had to kind of scrap and redo now with the iOS 14.5 release, because the Apple TV. So there's now a way that you can use all the Face ID iPhones to calibrate the colors of your TV when you're using an Apple TV. So you literally hold the phone so that it looks at the TV, you hold it up against the TV, and then it can calibrate the colors, but only for content that you're playing off of your Apple TV. It doesn't actually affect the TV itself, doesn't adjust any settings on the TV set itself. That is very interesting.
That is very interesting. Yeah.
And okay. That is now interoperable across the full tvOS running Apple TV line. So even my standard HD one is compatible with that. So I'm going to get that going. It's just, in my mind, it's the idea of using your phone as like a functional tool to navigate the ecosystem that it is placed inside of, which I think is really cool. And I think it's an important consumer tip to give.
Yes.
Think of the ecosystem that you're buying into, because you're spending 20,000 Rand on a flagship device.
Yeah.
Like, it should be able to offer you more value over time in terms of your user experience. Yeah.
Okay.
So that will be up on That Opinion Guy on YouTube, and thatopinionguy.co.za is the website. Gavin, what's up with you?
I feel the need to give out two quick tips to the listeners. The first is going to make your skin crawl, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, if you want to do a little bit of graphic design, cheap and dirty and quick and fast and whatever, you should try doing it in PowerPoint. Okay, Lindsay thinks this is absolutely horrendous because you need to use graphics programs to create graphical stuff. What I find is when I've got a picture and I just want to write a caption on the picture, like a meme kind of thing, or if I've got two pictures and I just want to combine the two together very quickly, or if I want to take this picture and resize it so it's the same size as that picture, I do that in PowerPoint. It's quick and easy, just because it is quick and easy, because it's not a graphics program. So even though I know how most of the design programs work, if I'm in a hurry, you can go to PowerPoint, work with your pictures and your text, and export that stuff as a pretty good resolution graphic. So that's just a tip for those who are PowerPoint power users. The second tip is a little more obtuse and a lot more technical. It's about something called Intel's Iris Xe graphics system. Mm-hmm. So in NVIDIA, everybody knows, has been the premium graphics chip supplier for a really, really long time. And it produced a quick and dirty, but still effective, low-priced graphics chip to go on laptops called an MX chip. So this was for people who weren't hardcore gamers. They just wanted slightly upgraded advanced graphics. Pretty good for gaming, not high-end, but affordable. That was the MX series. Now Intel has produced its own direct rival to that, which is the Iris Xe graphics. So if you're going to buy a new laptop, and if it's going to be above the entry level, try and get one that has Intel's Iris Xe graphics built in. It will be prominently marked somewhere on the laptop, because that's going to give you basic gamer grade graphics, and it's going to be better for creators and anyone working with video, that sort of thing. Look for Intel Iris Xe graphics. If it says Iris Xe Max, Xe Max, ironically, is weaker than Iris Xe. So try and get the pure Iris Xe graphics in your next laptop. Those are my two tips. That's all I have to say on that. What else am I busy doing? I have the new Oppo Reno 5, is it? Is it Reno 5 or 6?
Reno 5, yes.
Which is a very interesting phone so far. I'm afraid I still can't give you any technical background on it. Still busy messing around with it. I'm doing its photo test today, and I'm putting it up against Samsung's A32, which I just feel Samsung is heavily invested in their A32 as the budget leader. Okay, I'm all done. I'm going to compare these two phones, probably on Tech Radar.
Samsung A32, you say. I believe in that device. I believe in that device for the masses.
Yes, it's goodie.